This episode of Random Trek is brought to you by the Zombies Run Virtual Race. So we all know that running helps get you fit. I've been running a lot, but we also know that running is really boring. I know that very well. Well, this virtual race makes running fun. Wherever you are in the world, you head out to run 5 or 10K with your headphones in. As you run, the app immerses you in a thrilling audio story that's specially designed to match the distance you're running. You'll hear zombies close on your heels. You'll break into a vault that's vital to the survival of humanity. You'll run further and faster than you ever thought you could. Because with the Zombies Run Virtual Race, you're not just running around the park, you're running to save the world. Your entry gets you a thrilling audio adventure series that takes you from the start of your training right to the end of your race. You'll also get a pro spec technical running tee, a finisher's medal, and a bunch of other great gear. All of this for only $55, way cheaper and way more fun than a gym membership. Visit zombiesvirtualrace.com and use the coupon code RANDOMTREK to get $5 off your entry. Our thanks to Zombies Run Virtual Race. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast, in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I'm joined again by my wife, Marisa McClellan, canning expert and casual Star Trek fan. Marisa, thank you for being on.
It's my pleasure. I'm so glad to be here again.
Well, I'm happy to have you. We're sitting at our dining room table where we often sit together, so it is a familiar and comforting environment.
That's true, and it's not often that you get to record podcasts face-to-face, so I feel like it adds an extra element of, goodness to the podcast.
True. You record your podcast face-to-face.
It's true, I do.
Frequently. What is the name of your podcast?
My podcast is called Local Mouthful, and I record with my friend, my co-host, Joy Manning. She's another food writer and cookbook author here in the Philadelphia area, so we record a podcast together.
And where would people go to listen to this podcast?
They would go to localmouthful.com, where we talk about cooking, eating at restaurants, keeping cool in hot weather, and still continuing to cook your food, stuff like that.
How do you keep cool in warm weather and still continue to cook your own food?
You do things like cook early in the day, you batch cook, you use your slow cooker. If you have outdoor space, perhaps you take a slow cooker or a toaster oven out to your back porch or patio so that you're not heating up your kitchen.
Madness.
Well, we can't do anything like that because we live on the 20th floor of a high-rise. But other people can. They live closer to the ground and they can go outside.
If you have outdoor space and you can cook outside, go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
That's what you learned today on Random Trek. Well, thank you, Marisa, for joining us. You can also find Marisa on Twitter and all kinds of places. There'll be links in the show notes to Marisa's many wonderful things. You also have your most recent book is called
Naturally Sweet Food in Jars. It's my third cookbook about canning and preserving with natural sweeteners like honey, maple, coconut sugar, agave, and more. We watched a Voyager episode.
We did watch a Voyager episode. We watched season 3, episode 4, The Swarm. Now, when we talked, I don't remember what episode we watched when you were here last. Do you remember?
It was a Deep Space Nine episode. It was the one where Sisko is stuck on a planet with the crazy guy.
Gul Dukat.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And he's wounded, and there's some, I think it was a late season, and so.
We don't need to talk about
anyway,
that episode. I was trying to remember what series it is.
I remember.
You were very excited about remembering all these details, which I don't remember any of them. So we talked about Deep Space Nine, obviously, then. We probably also talked a little bit about Voyager, because I think, I don't know if this is true or not now that I'm thinking about this. Is Voyager your favorite Star Trek?
Voyager was the first Star Trek series that came on where I was conscious about looking forward to it. So I think Next Generation is my favorite simply because I've seen more of them, and it was the first Star Trek that I was aware of. But I remember being excited about Voyager and being excited that there was a female captain. And so I am a Captain Janeway all the way person.
Captain Janeway over Captain Picard.
Yes.
What do you like about Captain Janeway more than you like about Captain Picard? Other than obviously she's a woman, so that's, you know, you connect to a woman. She's one of the only.
I like how smart she is. Mm-hmm. I like that there is no attempt to dumb her down. She is a smart, experienced woman who can really do a lot. And in this episode, I feel like her intelligence was on display, which I appreciate. I also just like the character. I like what she's done. I like the choices she's made.
Fair enough. And in this episode, you mentioned, you commented, you thought, I don't remember her keeping the bun in episode 3.
season 3, yes, that's true.
Yeah, so she had a very impressive bun for the first couple of seasons of Voyager, which I think Kate Mulgrew is an attractive woman. I don't think that hairstyle does anything for her or for anyone, frankly, but they chose it. I don't know why. But.
Well, I think that they were thinking it was a power hairstyle.
Like a captain of a starship wouldn't want hair flying all over.
Yeah. But I feel like it aged her. And when she got her hair cut to that bob, well, she had the wore,
little bob. I thought that looked much better.
It looked much better. And also I think I'm creating a backstory here that,
feel free. You know, that headcanon.
Exactly. That I imagine she, as a character, as Captain Janeway, had that bun because it felt powerful to, you know, there is sort of this power in having this hair and being professional and, you know, this whole trope of women being, having their hair up and being professional and powerful and taking it down and being feminine. But so I wonder if that was sort of part of the thinking in having her.
This is something that I don't think about because I have very short hair.
True enough.
And I don't do anything to my hair, as you know. But are you suggesting that for some women, and this makes sense, but I've never actually thought about it, that, you know, when you're at work, you have one particular hairstyle, and then when you get home, the old trope of letting your hair down is actually literally true, because then you let your hair down out of your giant bun, in Janeway's case, and then you are kind of off-duty, Captain
Janeway. Yeah, and I think that at the time when Voyager was produced, that made, I feel like that's a vestige. That's not something necessarily that is true of our, you know, 2016 era here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Voyager is what, 20 years old now?
This episode aired September 25th, 1996.
Okay.
So 20 years.
20 years old. So that, I feel like that might have been more at play back in those days.
That's true. And of course, it was, I don't know if it was controversial that there was a woman captain, but I'm sure that some people were unhappy about it.
I loved it. I mean, well. I was, so if this is season 3 and started in 90, it was on in 96, I think that this Voyager started right around the time I started high school. And so for me, it was like, this is awesome. Female captain. Mm-hmm. So.
And there, so B'Elanna is also another strong female character. Although I'm trying to think in this episode, she does some engineering stuff and also gets stunned in the beginning.
Yeah.
Somebody has to get stunned, her and Tom Paris. And there's a weird, creepy scene in the beginning with her and Tom Paris.
Oh, that was so strange.
You talk about, I'm trying to think of other obvious Seven of Nine, but that's much later. Kes.
Kes is sort of,
what do you think of Kes?
Milk toast.
Oh, she is, an important character in this.
True.
Episode. This episode is, so many Star Trek episodes, they're an hour long, they need to fill the time, so they have A stories and B stories, right? And so the A story in this episode is basically, both of these I feel like are kind of Star Trek tropes.
Yes.
And specifically tropes that Voyager goes to again and again. Because they're lost and they want to get home. They don't want to, you know, go the long way around. And they always come to some point in space where there's some reason why it's really a better idea to go around. But Captain Janeway is like, I'm not going to spend an extra 15 months to go around. We want to get my crew home. Darn it. And so if you go through, it's only 4 days, which makes sense, I suppose. So they go through this space and bad things happen. Which I think can sums up a lot of Voyager episodes.
Yeah, I feel like that happened a number of times.
Yes. And then the B plus, which really makes no sense in being together with this A plot, and I don't really quite know why they did it, but is also a larger Star Trek trope, right? Because it's all about the Doctor, and he's losing his memory because he's running up against basically the limits of his programming. And they have to try and save him, and it's an exploration of, is he actually a sentient being, or is he just a program, and should we bother saving? Well, everyone kind of agreed that they should do something about it, but the question is, should they basically reboot him and then he starts from scratch, or should they go through the effort of trying to save him? And is he worth saving him? There's also a pot right next to me that I keep hitting with my Apple Watch, so maybe I'm going to move this pot. See, this is what happens when you record live, people. You get these things.
Well, and when you're working with someone who writes about food for a living, so that's there true. Is a 8-quart stock pot on the table.
There is. For people, you know, for hardcore Random Trek fans, I am usually recording in the den at my desk, which does not have an 8-quart stock pot on it.
I'm not allowed to put 8-quart stock pots in the den.
That is true, but we are today recording, as I said, in our dining room, which is totally the domain of Marisa. And so many things are on the table that I would not have on my desk. One of them being a stock pot that was right next to me.
Yes, anyway.
But that is that's for the true Random Trek fans who care about where things are recording. So those are the two plots.
And it was so weird because they don't go together.
No.
And there was no relationship. I feel like they should have at least tethered them together in some way, but they were not even remotely connected.
No. It felt to me as we were watching, and I think this episode is fine. It's not all that exciting. It's not the worst Voyager episode I've ever seen. It's fine. I did like that it, well, we'll get to the aliens. But it felt kind of like they had this idea with the aliens and the swarm, which is a cool idea, and then they needed to fill some time, and someone kind of pulled from some other script they had this doctor tangent that they could do, because it feels like they are in completely different episodes.
Yeah.
And they're not even, like, there's a big situation happening on Voyager, and it hardly impacts Kes and the Doctor, and B'Elanna is a little impacted because she gets pulled away from kind of helping the Doctor, and she has to go tend to whatever it is she tends to, and help leaves the Doctor with himself, Dr. Zimmerman, who is a diagnostic programmer, so that's fine. We'll get to that, but so yeah, I don't know what went on. It's kind of a little disjointed.
Yeah, it seemed like they had two scripts. Neither one of them were long enough to be a full episode on their own, so they sort of...
they just smashed them together.
Pretty much.
They merged them in Word or something and said, there we go. We got our episode. Call it The Swarm, and we're done. So let's talk about the opening scene.
Okay.
Which is, I guess they call it the teaser or something. It's B'Elanna and Tom Paris. And they are in a shuttlecraft.
Yes.
And they are just kind of hanging out, looking for some energy fluctuation that they found. And Tom, for some reason, is really into looking for it. And they spent something like 5 or 6 hours scanning space for this thing while the Voyager is off doing whatever it is Voyager is doing. Time for a quick sponsor break. Our thanks to Star Trek, the Starfleet Academy Experience, being held at the Intrepid Sea Air and Space Museum in New York City. They're celebrating 50 years of Star Trek with this first of its kind experience in the United States. This is the first venue that is hosting it. You go there, you channel your inner Spock, you go through a 1,200 square foot interactive journey featuring leap motion, projection mapping, holograms, and other Star Trek technologies. What it does is it takes you through a bunch of aptitude tests, and then it assigns you to a particular focus, so either languages, medicine, engineering, navigation, command, and science. Once you complete that training, you get your commission in Starfleet. As an added bonus, the museum also has the original Galileo shuttlecraft from the original series on display, so go check that out. I have been told you cannot touch it, so don't do that. This exhibition has already opened. It's open now. Go now. Stop listening. Well, pause this. Go buy tickets and then come back and finish the episode. It's only around for a limited time until October 31st, 2016, to be precise. The best part is that there is a promo code for $3 off. Use the promo code TREKKIE, that's TREKKIE, and you'll get $3 off. That offer is good for up to 4 full-priced adult, child, or senior Star Trek tickets. Use the promo code online or at the box office to receive the discount. It may not be combined with any other offer. In addition to the exhibition, the Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum is also putting on Star Trek-themed events all summer long, such as Star Trek movie nights on the flight deck and astronomy nights with a Star Trek twist. I don't know what the Star Trek twist is, but I bet it's good. The museum is located on Pier 86, West 46th Street and 12th Avenue in New York City. Visit intrepidmuseum.org/StarTrek for tickets and information. Boldly go. And so they're on this little shuttle, and B'Elanna is annoyed because she Klingon bodies were not made to sit for 6 hours straight. And so they have this talk about, this is before Tom Paris and B'Elanna, spoiler alert, become an item. So I guess this is supposed to be flirty, but Tom Paris starts asking her about some crewman who has a crush on her, and she is like, you know, I can handle him. He just has a crush. He's harmless. And Tom is like, oh, I don't know. It was kind of like he was doing, you know, like he had read one of those pickup artist manuals about how to woo a lady by doing all kinds of awful things.
Yeah. It just made me think it was a wonder those two got together because Tom Paris cannot flirt and seemed entirely inept in his conversation with B'Elanna.
Yes. And at the end of it, he said, what they were talking about, maybe going to the holodeck or something. I don't remember.
Yes.
And she said, no, I don't want to go to the holodeck with this other dude. And Tom Paris is like, well, whenever you have free time, maybe we could go to the holodeck together. And it was luckily interrupted by aliens beaming on and shooting them both.
Luckily.
And this is an interesting episode in that, so mostly there are some, you know, techno-babbly solutions to kind of big problems in Star Trek. Like, you know, the transporters famously were made because it was too expensive to film shuttlecraft landing on the planets for the original series. So they came up with transporters. When they started thinking about faster than light travel and what would happen if you actually did that, what would happen is that the inertia would crush everyone in the ship and everyone would die. So they came up with inertial dampeners. So that's not a problem. One of the biggest things is, of course, the universal translator. So you talk, it translates, everybody understands it because it translates it, I assume, in your native language somehow. It's never really clear how it works.
Yeah, you'd think you need to be wearing an earpiece at all times for that to work, but...
Technology.
It's the future.
It's the future, and it would make the having so many subtitles in episodic TV, I think, would not be a great idea.
True enough.
But this is one of the episodes where they meet an alien race that the universal translator cannot automatically translate for. So we hear a lot of clicks when the aliens basically hail the shuttlecraft, and they can't. They don't understand. Tom and B'Elanna don't understand what's happening. Well, they do understand what's happening, but they can't understand what the alien is saying, so they don't know what to say. And then the aliens don't give them much time because they beam aboard, and they shoot them both. And then we think, oh no, B'Elanna and Tom are dead.
I didn't think that.
I thought it. And then cue the start, you know, the Voyager music and all that good stuff. So it was Tom Paris is a troublesome character. I feel like, you know, you watch the original series and it's from the 60s. So you're like, okay, Captain Kirk is, you know, a space Lothario. He's a man of his time. You know, there's lots of super mini skirts and all that stuff. So you give it a little. I know some people think that it's wrong to kind of, that's a cop out that you say it's of its time. So you have to, some sexism is of course going to be part of it because it was part of the culture back then, whatever. But, this is only 20 years old and I feel like Tom Paris is a man who is, out of his time here, or not of his time, but you know what I'm saying, right? He's not fully evolved. He's kind of creepy.
True. But I also feel like the world has changed a lot in the last 20 years. That's so true. If you had people, you know, if the writers were in their 50s writing that character, perhaps it explains him. I don't know.
I don't want to make it sound like he's an awful character because he's not, but every interaction I feel like that he has with women specifically is kind of cringeworthy.
True. He is not good at dealing with women.
Yes. And maybe that's a choice. But I feel like So, you know, Geordi from The Next Generation, not good at dealing with women.
But either. He was respectful.
He was respectful. So I feel like the way Tom Paris is written, we are supposed to believe he is very good with women.
He is not smooth.
But I feel like, or is this just me projecting?
No, I think you're right. He is okay. Supposed to be good with women, and he is.
But the audience, we're supposed to believe that he's good with women.
Or maybe it really is just that he thinks he's good with women.
Oh, that's a deep
interpretation. And he's not.
These are many layers of
true.
Tom Paris.
I don't know that he's that layered.
I don't know either. Maybe he is. I mean, the question is, do we want to give the screenwriters the benefit of the doubt and think that they have layered on Tom Paris this kind of braggadocio. Is that how you say that? I think that's how you say it. someone can correct me. Of being like, he wants to be like Captain Kirk, because Captain Kirk was good at seducing women.
Yes.
If there's nothing else Captain Kirk could do, he can seduce any woman of any species fairly readily.
True. I don't know. I feel like this is far too deep into the Tom Paris.
We spent too much time talking about Tom Paris and his abilities with the ladies, is what you're saying.
Yes.
And plus, it's a very minor, it's like a minute and a half of the episode, but it struck me as being potentially troublesome. But let's move on to a bigger part. We'll talk about the Doctor.
Yes.
Because the next scene, I think, is the Doctor singing opera.
Yes. Because
he's obsessed with opera. I don't know if he's obsessed, but he is, you know, he likes opera.
Mm-hmm.
He's learning how to do it. It's unclear to me how the Doctor learns things. Like, does he just download them to his program, or does he actually have to practice? It seems like he has to practice because he creates a holodeck recreation of, I don't know anything about opera, but it's from La Boheme, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that, but Memory Alpha tells me. He's singing something from La Boheme. I don't know how to say what he's singing, so I'm not even going to bother. But it's a duet from Act 1 of the Earth Opera. They sang La Boheme, not to be confused with the Vulcan Opera of the same name. And so this is when we go, ooh, well, A, they have this this diva who is basically telling the Doctor that he's not very good singing.
Yes.
And he is saying that she is being a diva because she's, in fact, a diva. It was interesting. This is one of Jason Snell's the Star Trek Rule of Three, where she mentions the Doctor mentions that he listened to three different duets, versions of this duet. Two of them are from our time period, and the third is from the future. So that's what they always do. They always pick two kind of familiar things, and then a third one is some wacky, crazy thing from, you know, made up Star Trek land.
Makes sense. Because
that's what we know.
Yeah.
Those people. Yes.
Exactly.
So, but it was just funny. When I heard it, I chuckled because I thought of Jason Snell. And when I think of Jason Snell, I chuckle. I don't know what that means. But this is where we find out that something is not right with the Doctor.
Yes, because he forgets the words.
That's right. First, he comes in at the wrong time.
Yes.
And he blames her, and she's like, no, it's you. You are slow. I'm not being fast. And then he just forgets the lines or the words to the song, which seems like it should be impossible because he's a computer program and they should not forget things.
True enough.
And he is concerned. But he also, before he leaves, and I think it's kind of, so he's a holographic life form, but he deletes the diva very offhandedly, which I found surprising. Although, yes, she's not really a life form. She's just a hologram.
Well, I wasn't clear if he deleted her or if he just ended the program.
Well, he didn't, because she's the only thing that disappears.
Oh,
the
that's
rest
true.
Of the program
true.
Is running.
That was strange.
And then he leaves. Well, he was annoyed with her because there are many things that the Doctor is, but
patient.
Someone patient and open to criticism are not two of the things
true
that
enough.
The Doctor is. I will say, and I've said this on, I think, every episode that I've talked about Voyager, the Doctor is one of my favorite characters on Voyager. So even though I think this B story makes no sense with the A story, I was happy to have a story about the Doctor because
yeah.
I like Robert Picardo, and I think he did a good job on this episode.
Well, and I appreciated the fact that I always like it when shows build people's talents into the script. So obviously Robert Picardo is a really good singer. He enjoys talented singing, yes. And so it's fun to see that. It's fun that he even playing a holographic medical program, he gets to exercise those skills.
Yes. Did he ever sing on China Beach is the question. He was on China Beach.
I think I was too young for China Beach.
I watched a little bit of China Beach.
I remember that being on when I was like in the fourth grade. So I think I was just a little too young for it.
I don't have very strong memories of it, but I do remember whatever. I remember the face of the woman star. I don't remember her name, though. Dana Delaney?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. I don't know. I wonder if she's within Star Trek. I don't know. But this is not the China Beach, random China Beach. Or I guess it would be random beach.
Anyway,
back to the episode at hand. We find out, oh no, the Doctor's memories are fragmented, and he's losing memories. He can't, and it's getting worse and worse very quickly. Mm-hmm. And this is a problem because
he's a doctor.
He's a doctor, and he's their only doctor. He has Cass as his nurse, but she isn't very useful. Let's just be honest. That's harsh on Cass.
But she's as useful as a 3-year-old can be, I think.
That's true. Well, I think she's more useful than a human 3-year-old would be in this situation, but as useful as she possibly can. She tries really hard, but she's not a doctor because she's not. The doctor is the doctor. She doesn't need to be a doctor. B'Elanna and Tom, they find them. We think, oh no, they're dead, but they're not. They've been beamed to sickbay, and the doctor recognizes that they have had some kind of neurological stun hit them. He fixes up B'Elanna quickly. For some reason, Tom Paris is more complicated. So they get B'Elanna. Well, the reason is because B'Elanna's the engineer, so she can help solve the problem with the doctor. But they need a reason to prove that the doctor's deteriorating memory is actually a problem. And the problem is that he cannot perform the operation on Tom Paris because he's forgotten how to do it. And so everybody's like, oh no, don't let Tom Paris die. Although I'm sure some crew members are like, well... If somebody has to die, might as well be Tom Paris. So this is where we find out this is the big problem. There are two big problems in this episode. They need to get through this space that is controlled by these aliens that they don't know anything about. And they need to fix the doctor. And we don't know if they're going to do either successfully. Although we're pretty certain they're going to do both successfully. And they do.
In a nice, neat one-hour package.
That's right. And Neelix... doesn't do much in this episode, but he does let the crew know that while he doesn't know the name of the aliens or what they look like or anything about them, he does know that anyone who enters this, they are very territorial. They don't want anyone to enter their, sphere of space. And anyone who enters is never heard from again because they are killed. But he doesn't know how they do it. He doesn't know anything about their weapons. He just knows. It's kind of like an urban legend, right? It's a space legend. It's like the Bermuda Triangle in space, only with deadly aliens inside of it. So he basically says, we probably shouldn't go through. And Captain Janeway says, we're going through. And they figure out Tom, good old Harry Kim, our favorite Harry Kim, also doesn't have much to do in this episode. He figures out they have some kind of tachyon field, and he figures out how to sneak into it. And this is where Tuvok, who's another one of my favorite characters, basically says, we shouldn't do this. It's not a good idea. And he tries to remind Captain Janeway of regulations about putting the ship in peril or something like that. And Captain Janeway's like, I don't care about regulations. We're going through.
And Tuvok is not happy.
Tuvok is not happy, but he follows orders. He actually is not really involved in any of the steps required to go through, but he does frown in the background.
It's true. And I do feel like a Vulcan would never say, I told you so. But that's what he's thinking later on.
It is true. When they are being attacked by... So the cool thing about this episode is that I think generally when we see space combat in Star Trek, it is, there's this idea of capital ships and fighter ships, right? Star Wars battles are generally between fighters, so X-Wings and TIE fighters and all that stuff, right? Star Trek battles are usually between these big capital ships, so you think of Wrath of Khan, right, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
This episode, the aliens, who I don't know if we ever find out what their names are, They basically swarm.
Yeah.
They stay in a giant swarm of tiny little ships.
No, I thought that was really cool that they had this whole other way of approaching it where they all sort of clamp onto the hull mm-hmm. and essentially like absorb energy. And at one point they said that they use their, like they change the, like the field, like the...
Right, yeah. So they had like one little swarm ship went up to the Voyager and shot something at them. And they were like, that didn't even go through our shields. What is it doing? But it turns out they did some kind of...
Yeah, it changed like the...
burst or something. I don't know what.
The vibration and or the
polarity wave, yeah. of the shields. It like reversed them. And that turns out to mean that, you know, it becomes a beacon for, you know, basically saying, hey, Voyager's right here. And then the entire swarm, which is like, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands of ships... approach and envelop, well, I don't think the whole swarm does, but a little section of the swarm comes out and envelops Voyager.
Yeah, and doesn't it also turn their weapons against them? Because when they fire, the burst hits them because they have changed the polarity mm-hmm. of the shield, so it's reflecting things back at them.
Yeah, so these aliens are very interesting.
Yeah.
We don't learn much about them, except they look cool when they transport onto... did they transport onto Voyager?
Yes, they did.
And they shoot a bunch of people with their neurological weapons... and Captain Janeway is like, we just want to go through. We don't want to take any of your stuff. And they don't really care.
I think the Universal Translator manages to translate one thing, which is like, it's too late.
Yes, that is because they gave them the warning. I think that the shuttlecraft, obviously, they warned the shuttlecraft and said, don't come in.
Yeah.
But then Voyager obviously didn't know that that's what it was. And so they went in anyway. And all heck broke loose.
That's right. Keep it
family friendly. And our final sponsor of the podcast is the official Star Trek Starships collection, available only from Eagle Moss Collections. They sent me three of these ship models, and they are fantastic. They sent me the Enterprise from Enterprise. They sent me the NCC-1701 from Star Trek The Motion Picture, and they sent me a Klingon Bird of Prey. They're fantastic. The extensive collection features the most significant vehicles from across all five Star Trek TV series, plus each of the Star Trek movies from Star Trek The Motion Picture to Star Trek Beyond, which isn't even out yet. That's how good these people are. Each model is cast in a specially formulated metallic resin and hand-painted with reference to the actual CG models used in production and, where they exist, photos of the original studio models. I was very impressed by the level of detail on these models, and I'm sure you will be too. Each of them also comes with a display base, plus a collector's magazine featuring behind-the-scenes info, original design sketches, and a breakdown of technology on board. Those magazines are great as well. Start your collection today with the USS Enterprise 1701D, that's from The Next Generation, folks, for only $4.95 with free shipping. New models ship twice monthly and are delivered directly to your door. You can cancel your subscription at any time. For more details on the entire collection and to order, visit st-starships.com/random.
But while all this is happening, in the B plot over here, the doctor is degrading.
He is.
And no one's really saying.
Nobody cares.
And so they're going to, you know, so they pull up the diagnostic program, which mm-hmm. is a version of Dr. Zimmerman.
Yes, who is
the maker.
The maker, yes, the creator of the emergency medical hologram. And he is, and you know, Robert Picardo, they make Robert Picardo do this fairly frequently, play against themselves.
Yeah.
And play two variants of the same character. I think this might be the first time that they've done it.
And I obviously he did it very well in this episode, so that is why they made him do it over and over again.
It's true. And he does, there are a couple things I like in this episode. Overall, I think it's kind of a mediocre episode, but I like the idea of the swarm.
Yeah.
And I like the scenes with Robert Picardo and Robert Picardo playing against himself, which must be very difficult to do. Because obviously they have to film them separately.
Yeah.
Because there's only one Robert Picardo, and I don't know how they do that.
What? But
I know, it's shocking. This is insider knowledge to a Star Trek production. But they did not clone Robert Picardo for this episode. He just said his lines and then changed his costume and said the other one.
Mind blown.
I know, it's crazy. But Dr. Zimmerman, as we know, is sassy. So even the holographic representation, who is really... I mean, and this is also, you know, they establish many things about Dr. Zimmerman in this episode. First off, This is when we find out, oh, he made the emergency medical hologram look like himself. But also we find out that, you know, the holographic diagnostic suite, which is what he is another version of himself. And it is his laboratory. You would think it would be more efficient if it were just like something that B'Elanna would go up to a console and type some things, which she does actually when she's trying to troubleshoot the doctor. She has a console and she makes him do some stuff and changes some stuff, but then they have to go to the holodeck and use this advanced diagnostic to find out why he's losing all his memory. Although they also, I think we mentioned this, they do have a clear solution and one they know would work and would stabilize the program, but which is basically rebooting him and emptying all of his memories. And so he would start as a fresh emergency medical hologram, not having his personality or any of his memories. And they decide they shouldn't do that.
And they decide that's the last case scenario.
Because they do need, at the end of the, you know, when you get right down to it, they need the emergency medical hologram. But luckily, spoiler alert, they save him and everybody's fine. And I'm trying to think that there are some good moments where he completely forgets, you know, what he's doing. He forgets who Cass is. There's an interesting interaction where he's like, well, I don't know who you are. And Cass is very sad. And she says, you know, he's trying to remember things. And he says, well, what's my name? And she says, you're the doctor. And he says, I know I'm the doctor, but what's my name? And she says, you don't have a name. And then he gets very upset about how he doesn't have a name and how she doesn't even know what his name is. So how could she possibly be his friend?
Yeah, I thought that was probably the most poignant moment in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And if only all of the episode could have been like that, it would have been an amazing episode.
Yeah, I feel like they could have. And what you said earlier is probably true. These are probably two episodes that they put together as one. Because I think they both, the A and B plot, could theoretically have enough to support a whole episode, because, you know, the swarm is interesting. They could have done more stuff with, you know, figuring out how to communicate and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, having a deeper meditation on what makes the doctor, and is he... So, you know, the diagnostic program basically says, well, we just need to reboot him. He's just a program. He doesn't have any friends. He's a series of algorithms. Any emotions you think he has are just programmed into him. So... you know, he's just as much a person as I am, so let's just reboot him and be done with it. And he has all this extraneous stuff in his memory.
Like opera.
And encounters with women, he points out. I don't know exactly what that means, but...
I found that suspect.
Yes, I don't know. And so he's like, well, we just get rid of all this stuff and it'll work. And that's when Cass is like, no, the doctor is our friend. He's gone beyond his programming, so he shouldn't be punished for trying to be, you know, that's what everyone is trying to do, be better, greater than the sum of their parts. And the doctor has done this, so we shouldn't, you know, wipe away what he's done. And I feel like they could have spent a whole lot of time pondering the ramifications, and, you know, there could have been an episode where there was some kind of, you know, outbreak that was affecting a lot of the crew. And this is another, you know, one of the great things about Voyager is that they are cut off from all kind of help. So that gives us a lot of situations where Captain Janeway has to make a lot of tough decisions, right? Yeah. So this could have been an episode where, like, you know, 90% of the crew or something is under... This is another Star Trek trope, some kind of fatal, almost fatal disease, right? And they need to solve it.
18 hours to give them the medicine, right. And only he can make it, but he's losing his memory. So do we save the crew, or do we, you know, sacrifice him?
Do we reboot the doctor or save the crew? And, you know, then Captain Janeway, of course, would probably say, all right, we'll give, you know, in 12 hours, if this isn't fixed, we need to reboot the doctor and all that good stuff. But that is not the episode we got. Yeah. But
well, I feel like they deal with some of these issues of the doctor and his personhood later in the series,
mm-hmm.
To really interesting effect. And so, you're always talking about, like, wouldn't this thing be an interesting series? Like, you know, different concepts of Star Trek digging into various, you know, sort of tales and subplots. And I feel like the world of holograms, because obviously there's a whole full fleshed out world of holograms in the Star Trek universe. And so, like, what's happening in that world?
Yeah, it's almost like we find out that there are a whole bunch of doctors.
Yeah, working in the mines.
Mm-hmm. being enslaved, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be, I don't, and I'm sure Robert Picardo would be very excited because they all look like him, so he would need to be part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do, I think, you know, the Doctor is one of my favorite characters just because it's so interesting that he is, you know, you got Spock, who is not, he's half human, half Vulcan, so you've got that kind of tension there about he's an alien, but he's also the same. You've got Data, who is, you know, looks like a human, but he's an artificial intelligence, and he wants to be a real boy. And you've got the Doctor, who doesn't, he's basically a projection. Right, in this episode, this is before they get the mobile holo emitter, so he is stuck on either the holodeck or the medical sickbay. But you get the sense that the Doctor is happy being a hologram, like unlike Data, who really wants to be a human. You get the underlying sense that he really wants to be a human. You get the sense from the Doctor that he is happy, you know, to a point where he's kind of smug about how great he is. He doesn't really want to be a human, but he wants to get the respect and the recognition that he is a sentient being who isn't human, but who should be recognized, right? And so that's why, and they do a lot of interesting stuff with that. Not this episode. This is kind of, you know, they're dipping their toes in that, but I think it's a big pool, and so it's interesting to see them fiddle with it.
Definitely.
And I found it very interesting. The scenes where, you know, B'Elanna is basically controlling the Doctor are interesting because she's just pressing buttons. And then this character who has agency is forced to sing because she has pressed buttons and he can't stop himself. He has to do what he's programmed to do. So that's always interesting, too.
It is. I guess one of the things that I thought about, you know, they're talking about how his program is fragmenting. You'd think that they could, like, back up his, back up his personality files and then reinstall them later after they reboot him. Like, I felt like
I had the same thought when they emailed him to Barclay. I thought, well, why don't they just make a copy of him and send the copy and then they could keep him? But they can't, apparently. I don't know. I'm no holo engineer, so I don't know what the problems are with that. But the solution is, you know, the Matrix is becoming unstable, so Dr. Zimmerman basically said, well, actually, B'Elanna says, Dr. Zimmerman, isn't your holo matrix exactly the same as the emergency medical holograms? And he's like, yes. And so they basically use his matrix and replace the Doctor's, and then they reboot him, or they don't really reboot him, they start him up, he appears, and it seems like when they first start him up, and he says, please state the nature of the medical emergency. And Kes says, we don't have any emergency. We just want to talk to you. And he kind of gives the default, the stock answers, right? It seems like he's been set. It was set to factory defaults. And B'Elanna's like, well, I kind of have a headache. And he's like, oh, fine. I will help you. And then you think, oh, no, the Doctor's personality is gone. But then he wanders off into his office and he starts singing under his breath opera. And that's actually how they end the episode. Yeah. So
it's a good ending.
It is a good ending, and it leaves it as an exercise to the viewer to assume that the Doctor will be back to his old self in the next episode, which in fact is the truth. I actually don't know what the next episode is, but I can guarantee you that the next episode, they do not make any mention of this episode, and the Doctor is the way he was before this episode.
I know. It's like they never make mention.
No, they don't. That it was, you know, that this was a different time in television where it was much more episodic. Although the later seasons do a little bit more, but Deep Space Nine is busy running concurrently and doing crazy story arcs and stuff. So
they're carrying the story arc torch.
They are. And speaking of, then we have to talk about the resolution of the A plot, which is basically we get some cool scenes, and this is, you know, Voyager, not my favorite Star Trek series, but I would like to see them redo it and remaster it in HD, which they probably never will, because of scenes like this where we get the scene of all the little swarming ships kind of attaching themselves to the hull of Voyager, which looks very cool, but it's an SD. It could look much cooler.
just want everything to be in HD, Scott.
I do. It's true. Well, we have a giant HD TV. I want it to look its best. But anyway, so it latches on. You think, oh no, this is the end of our friends on the Voyager. But somebody comes up with some idea about reversing basically poisoning the ships by pulsing out energy or something through the hull or something. I don't know. And then it works, and all the ships drop off and blow up, and many hundreds of those aliens are killed.
Well, they deserved it.
That's right. They were not very nice. And the rest of the swarm takes that as a hint that maybe we should leave Voyager alone, and they go away, and Voyager sails through their space. And really, what do you think about it? Voyager was in the wrong here because they violated the sovereignty of this alien swarm. They were warned not to do it, even though they couldn't understand it. And the swarm was just predicting its space. Now, the swarm, of course, kind of jerky because all Voyager wanted to do was pass through. But, hey, what can you do?
I don't know. Voyager is always right, right?
Well, is that true, though?
Probably not. But... You know, everybody always thinks they're right. That's kind of how life is.
That is true. That has led to many situations in life, unfortunate situations. So rest in peace, swarm aliens that get killed. I don't think anyone on Voyager gets killed. So hooray, all humans intact.
Was Chakotay even in this episode?
Yes, he was on the bridge.
Okay,
talking about doing stuff, I think.
I have no recollection of him in this episode.
He doesn't do much that I can remember. Harry Kim doesn't do much. Neelix doesn't do much. Chakotay does less than either of them. Tom Paris is unconscious for most of it.
But then he flies the ship.
But he does fly the ship. B'Elanna's helping the doctor and then trying to figure out how to, you know, reverse the polarity or whatever the heck they do. Captain Janeway is making decisions as she does. The doctor is falling apart. Cass is trying to help him. Have we missed anyone? Tuvok is not a fan of anything that's going on.
He's standing in the background thinking, I told you so.
That's right, if we didn't go through here. Overall, we've had a wide-ranging conversation about Voyager and this episode.
Yes.
I was thinking that perhaps we would not have enough to say about this episode because it's kind of straightforward. But what did you think of this episode?
I enjoyed it. I tend to not be a super critical person. Like, I'm not re-watching things, pulling them apart. I enjoyed the Doctor sort of plot line better than the Swarm plot line because, you know, a faceless, unnamed enemy is not always that interesting to me, whereas the sort of the human or holographic humanity issues around that. Yeah, the issues of the humanity of a hologram is sort of more interesting to me than...
Speciest.
So.
It's not humanity. It's, I don't know. That assumes that he is a human. He doesn't
want to be. But it's not... He's not a human, but it, like his essential...
His hologramness.
Yes.
His essence.
His soul. His personness.
Oh, there you go. His hollow soul.
No.
No?
No, that's you, Scott, right?
I have a hollow soul.
That was more interesting to me. I thought it was a perfectly fine Voyager episode. Not a great one, but not a terrible one. I mean, there are far worse Voyager episodes than this.
Yes, there are. And I've watched them.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was fine.
It was fine. And thank you so much for joining me to talk about it.
It was my pleasure. I didn't even have to go anywhere to do it.
That's right. You just had to come into the dining room.
Exactly.
And move a pot.
You move the pot.